الله الرحمن الرحيم. I had come across some correspondence between some Mulana Butler of Raiwind. I haven't seen him personally, I saw the correspondence between Mulana Butler and Hazrat Shahbuddin Mulana Muhammad Zakariya Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi. And I asked Mullah Ismail to translate the whole thing. The essence of it was this: Mulana, he had seen a dream of Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and the Shaykhin and Abu Bakr and Umar radiyallahu anhu. And the dream is quite long, but showing some disappointment, and whether it was Nabi's person or the Abu Bakr passing on a tasbih to him. So the Shaykh al-Hadith Muhammad Zakariya Sahib Ahmadiyya have to give an explanation to this dream. The essence of his explanation was, I'm explaining this point to people, but they don't seem to be grasping the point. Point is that those that are engaged in tasawwuf, etc., they should participate in some of the jamaat programs. And those that are engaged in jamaat programs, then somewhat they should join in the tasawwuf. But that makes the person complete. If he only does this and he leaves out the tasawwuf side, then there's going to be a loss. And if he's only doing tasawwuf and he's not doing the jamaat work, then too is going to be a loss. And what we have been commanded is udkhulu fi silmi kaffa, coming to Islam and come complete. In the words of Muhammad Jassab rahmatullah alayhi, that if it is that we leave out the essence of the work, the usul, etc., our dagi ho jati hai, becomes just a plaything and a casual thing. So the essence, etc., normally is the essence, the seriousness and the importance, that's the root, that's the soul. Shah Waliullah Sahib Rahmatullah would say that this tasawwuf is the root of deen. So then if the root is not captured and instilled, then it becomes an effort that's just got a body, it doesn't have life. Just a body like a robot, but no life. So to get the life, this has to be joined. So this group, we join up with that. It doesn't have to mean that all the time they join up, but according to time availability, etc., they make the time available and they link up. And that group makes itself available this side and they link up. Now imagine how pleased the soul of Rasulullah Paksan will be when he sees that the Ummat is one. They haven't been divided. They are cooperating with them and they are cooperating with others. So they seem to be one joint group, one joint mission. I'm respecting you for what you're doing and you are respecting me for what I'm doing, and it seems like one group. Obviously, every person can't do both complete. He will do one work to a higher level and the second work to a little lower level. So that will happen. Like, the person is the madrasa, so his efforts will be directed in ta'aleem, acquiring deen and passing on. So he can't be active in all the jamaat programs. Can't now, for example, go to the Shabguzari every week. He can't go for the gush all the time. He can't participate in the istimas all the time. So he'll go, he'll link up, but to the extent that he can manage. So overall, it would appear that it's a work that combine, everybody's linked up and everybody's agreed to it. But the participation shows that no, we also agree to do this work here, hence this work is important. In different Islamic eras, there were different type of needs, dini needs. You see, in the time of the Sahaba Ikram, then there was a need to memorize the Quran Sharif. But Umar radiallahu anhu's khilafat, and he's sending a director to the Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas to get the armies to memorize the Quran. Then a similar note is sent to Abu Musa Ashari in Egypt, and there's 10,000 people, 10,000 soldiers that learn the Quran Sharif. Day they are striving in jihad, etc., and night they are memorizing. So the night and the day have been covered up. So one era this was required. Father Diran request for Ibn Mas'ud to be sent over to Kufa, but he has a detailed account of the teachings and the ways and the mannerisms of Rasulullah Pakistan Prasam. Umar Diyan says that I need him more, but I prefer you to myself. So I need him more, but now you don't need him there in Kufa, so I send him. So now, see, now there's a need to teach. There's a need to learn namaz, so Allah Ta'ala sends down Jibreel Islam, and Jibreel Islam comes in person and he passes on namaz to Rasulullah Pakistan for two consecutive days. It also makes us understand that deen is not just book study, it is from person to person, heart to heart. Otherwise, Allah Ta'ala could have just told, or this is how namaz is performed. A booklet should have been sent and illustrated. Here Jibreel Islam is sent down, and two consecutive days, this is whether this is the time, that the time, this is the time it starts off and ends, and this is how the namaz is performed, this is the wuzu, etc. So every namaz has been illustrated for two consecutive days, impressing upon us the importance of teaching things practically. See, like we'll teach namaz and we'll teach it from a book. It will take time for an average person to grasp it, right? How this thing is done, how ruku is done. You can't get it full. But the same thing, if it is done practically, in about half an hour, he'll learn the whole thing. Apart from the dua, it may take some time, but otherwise, the postures, all that he'll learn very quickly. When we were in Myaswam, so there are different levels. So there are levels for new boys that are coming in, that are still learning Islam, and there will be a level for those that already know. So someone is doing hijab, etc. So those that are new and they still have to learn, right? Now namaz is an incumbent. Now how do we get them to perform namaz? If you ask them to learn Alif Ba, learn the Quran Sharif, then memorize, that may take over a year before he starts doing his farz. So what they would do is they would have about 6 or 7 boys in a circle, and one they'll pair that group with one boy, one old boy. So the 7 new, and this is one old boy. So this old boy will be instructed that just repeat the du'as and the surahs of namaz. Surah Fatiha, surahs, basic surahs, maybe from Alif Ba to the end, Du'a Qunut, Tashahud, etc. And I would see that within about 5 or 6 weeks, they got the whole thing on. He's reading and they're repeating. So twice, thrice in the day, they're doing the same thing. So if they repeat this in this manner, so quickly it's done. Okay. And simultaneously, the other work also carries on, learning to recite the Quran Sharif. But now, because of that, why must he leave all the farz? So, get this done, and get this done as well, get both done. But overall, this self-studying is not the way of the past. And it shows its harms, it shows that it's not the most effective way. In Abu Dawud Sharif, there's about 7 Sahaba Ikram, Ali, Abu Usman, Abu Muawiyah, Ibn Abbas, Ibn Miqdad, approximately 7 Sahaba Ikram that are doing the wuzu practically and showing it to the Sahaba, to the people around. They're doing the wuzu but doing it practically. Namaz, you see, a person is performing his namaz and he's not doing it properly with proper postures. So he's ordered now, Salli fa in laka lam tusalli. And then he comes and complains that that's the only namaz that I know. I don't know any namaz better than this. So he's shown all right, this is how the namaz is done. But you see, person to person, that's why you find a person that is doing personal or self-studies makes a lot of mistakes. There may be one rare case where you got it right, but generally, when you're doing it from a book, you won't get it exact. You're getting it from a person that the way that we have inherited from the beginning. So overall, there's two things that we need to understand. One is the preserving of deen, right? And the other is the propagating of deen. Both works are needed. One is the preserving, one is the propagating, right? Then the ummah will be involved in both. A sizable population of the ummah, your main endeavor in life is preserve it and propagate. Preserve it and propagate, right? But provided you got a sizable number of Muslims doing it, then you see that the whole table will change around. Now you're seeing Muslims are being downtrodden, oppressed everywhere. Muslim lands or non-Muslim lands, the oppression, the cruelty, everything's carrying on, right? But then the basic reason is that we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing. See? Now, our whole focus has become just sustaining life. Why are we working to sustain life? And then when we sustain yourself, there's no limit. Where the person is getting 10,000 for more, not enough. Let me try for a higher 20,000. That's not enough. 30,000. Not enough. 40,000. And this carries on. So there is no limit. So the idea is primarily we are here to preserve the deen. Allah sent us what? لتخرج الناس من عبادة العباد إلى عبادة رب العباد. To get people on the right track. Get them to understand things in perspective. Get them to think and understand and work in perspective. Understand what you explained yesterday or the other day that we come here to acquire taste. So this is the meaning of لِتُخْرِجَ النَّاسِ مِنْ عِبَادَةِ الْعِبَادِ إِلَىٰ عِبَادَةِ رَبِّ الْعِبَادِ. So you get the right taste. Where's your energy, your brain, your mind, where it's gone to? You're not saying that you're not using it. It is only for the self. But what was the reason for Allah Ta'ala sending us here? Ukhrijat bin Nas, what was the purpose? Purpose something else, and then we are doing something else. Whole idea is something else, right? And our whole effort, our time, energy has been exhausted in something else. So we have to come back on track, come back online. Understand what we've been sent for. Understand, or at see the old Muslims, what they were doing. Then you see a change, a massive, drastic change, right? Then you see, otherwise you won't see it. Remember, that power and control authority is not based on equipment, and artillery and how sophisticated weapons you are. Not based on that. It's based on two things. One is the decision of Allah Ta'ala, and the other is your commitment to deen. So the commitment, what is the percentage of the commitment? If you got a good percentage, then you see things working out in your favor. And this is the promise of the Quran Sharif. وَعَدَ اللَّهُ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا مِنْكُمْ وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ لَيَسْتَخْلِفَنَّهُمْ Iman and good works. Then Allah Pak will give you the reins. He will let you be in power. But then what is the requirement? What is the shirt? What is the condition? Condition is Allah Pak giving a promise, I'll do it for you. But you do this much. But now, when Allah Pak says do this much here, that means a sizable population of the Muslim must do it. Like if 1-2 people are doing it, 1% of the people are doing it, then you don't have the right numbers. When you don't have the right numbers, then you can't say that why these things are not coming, why are we not looking, being looked with respect, why our people are selling our people out, why are they behaving like this. You can't be complaining. But there's something wrong. It's a promise of Allah Ta'ala, it must happen. But then, if we are not fulfilling our side of the deal, then you can't expect all the results to show. So nobody is exempt from deen khidmat. Khidmat of deen, nobody is exempt. Everybody should be doing something constructive, positive. and some things are of an academic level, right? You have to accept that it's an academic level. If it's a translation that has been rendered, understand it's a translation. So the translation, you can't capture those technical terms that are contained in a translation. There may be some words that are used, but those words come in an academic level, right? They're just translated. When they're just translated, you can't capture it. Like for example now, you got a word like gharib. You say that first hadith of Bukhari Sharif and the last hadith of Bukhari Sharif is gharib. Now gharib, in our Urdu and Gujarati, if a gharib aya hai, darwaze ke par koi gharib aya, zara usko zara dekh lo. How you translate that? Poor. Now, what does that person know? What is the exact meaning of gharib when it's used in this type of a context? He doesn't know. He's just going by the translation. The hadith is gharib, it's poor. Similarly, now you get the hadith coming and the muhaddith writes, comments on the hadith is da'if, right? Literally it means weak, right? Now you don't know what is the technical meaning. Why? Because you just made a word-for-word translation. The reader is just reading the word-for-word translation. He thought, no, I got the whole thing. Right? Sometimes the hadith has got a context. And unless you don't know the context, you haven't grasped the hadith. You've got the wording, but you don't know the context. Sometimes you saw that hadith, right? And you're copying it down, right? You're copying it down. So the ustad has given you his book, right? And or his manuscript, and he allowed you to copy it from there, right? So you're copying it. You're copying it and you're relating the hadith. There too you can make a mistake. See? Like you get, even in English you get some words, they spell different and they pronounce different. P-U-T, how you pronounce it? And B-U-T. So until you don't know all these things here, how it's worked, how it's pronounced, can you get the right thing? So you need someone to correct it. I'm just showing one example, but there can be a lot of examples, right? Sometimes that word is silent. You spell knife, you start off with what? K. Now, someone doesn't know about it, what level? You will say what level? You're wrong, is it? So some things you have to learn it personally. You can't just go through a translation, no, I got it right. It's going to be very misleading. That's why there's a famous muhaddith called Ibn al-Lahiyah, right? So most of the muhaddithin will say da'if, that he is weak. Why? Because he got a manuscript from his ustad, but he didn't learn it personally. So there were some places that he made some major discrepancies, right? For example, he reported the hadith, ihtajama an-nabiyyu sallallahu alayhi wa sallam fil masjid. Ihtajama means, hajamat means cupping, you know, you do cupping. So the word that he related was ihtajama an-nabiyyu sallallahu alayhi wa sallam fil masjid. Okay, Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam did hajamat in the masjid. So the students asking, in the masjid, kya? Fi masjid in Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Right. Now obviously, this cupping process, it entails some removing of something that is napak. Blood, what is blood? That is napak. So how was this practice in the masjid? Now someone compared it, right? See, sometimes it's one hadith, right? But two students are reporting the hadith. He's one student, he's another student, and they're reporting it. There may be 20 students are reporting the same hadith of the same ustad, right? Now they went and compared with the other manuscripts and with the other students, they found that it was not ihtajama, it was ihtajara. Now that makes a world of a difference. Ihtajara would mean now, you know, in i'tikaf we make a cubicle, right? So ihtajara, this is what it means. To make a cubicle in the masjid at the time of i'tikaf, that's what it means. But now see how the meaning just capsized. Now people are relying on translations. Now I got it, see, I got it, I know it. Zayif, Bukhari said, bhai, have you got it right? Have you got it from a teacher, someone instructing you? So the importance of getting it directly. So the word is also important, the word that has been preserved, but to get the understanding directly from the teacher is also very important. Just getting the word and not getting the explanation directly from the ustad, that's half the job. So to get it job, to get it complete, get it sound. Otherwise, one person will make a mistake, he'll transmit it to the next person, third person, and the mistake will just carry on flowing. Nobody corrected it from the root, so it just carries on. But this is the miracle of the hadith, that there are so many people to see the accuracy. They didn't just leave it like that. If you reported it, I don't say, no, Yunus is a great man, so just carry on. We'll go and see the credentials. Who he reported from, who's Yunus, when, what was his day of birth, right? How long did he live? His memory, was it stable from the beginning to the end? Who were his teachers, right? And who were his contemporaries, right? Who were the contemporaries, right? So the contemporaries, what they have to say about him. Were there others also that reported the same hadith from the same ustad? So they're going to check all these things. So sometimes someone is trying to forge it and he gets caught out. For example, he'll say now, Yunus is the ustad, Yunus is the teacher of, say, Ismail, right? Yunus is a student of Ismail. So Ismail now, what is the what was the date of his birth and death? And Yunus now, they start comparing, right? For Ismail, he passed away 2080, right? And Yunus just came onto the scene he was born 2075. So he said, working out, he's born 2075, so how can he be a student? Can he be a student? Or his birth is 2081. That means the student came after the ustad. So they go and check it up and they scrutinize it properly. A proper job he's done. I was talking to one specialist doctor. He tells me that because he has to specialize, a lot of things they have to go and scrutinize, they have to go and check out, you know. See, we use the same standards what's used by the muhaddithin. Because scientifically it's found that these standards are most accurate. So the same standards that they use to verify something, we use the same standard. Because you can't find a standard that is as accurate as their standard. See? So that's why I say that this whole hadith, that is a miracle in itself, 1400 years, how it was preserved, how they got it right. So we're talking now that the preserving of deen and the propagating of deen, both are required. And one zamana, there was a need to learn the Quran Sharif, so they did it. Then there was a zamana to learn the hadith, and I showed something, right, on Bukhari sahab, and how many 80,000 or something, 90,000 students he had, right? So to preserve the hadith, right? Ibn Manda at the time of his passing away, 40 trunks of kitabs he had, copying it, recording it, preserving it. So that was one zamana. That was first zamana, this is the second zamana. Then there were, at times, there were obstructions on the part of deen, right? When you go and let the crystal clear water of deen flow, let people enjoy spiritual life, and someone is becoming an impediment, what do you do? Imagine a swing of beach needs water, right? Water is life. And someone blocks the road, what do you do? You have to save the life here. That's why you have to save the life. You have to remove the impediment. If he's not coming out gently, then you have to force him out. Somewhere you have to force him out. Why? The life is too important. So just like the physical life is important, spiritual life is also important. There's impediments. When there's impediments, they have to be removed, and we carry on. See? Now, that ummah has to realize that this, the water of life, of spiritual life, that has to be passed on. The water of spiritual life, and when the water of spiritual life is passed on, the magnificent effect it has. There is a group of Sahaba, Tabi'in, etc. They're residing in a certain Jewish colony, right? Jewish colony, and they're residing there. As Umar radiallahu anhu instruction came, right, move from here. You need to move to that different area, another colony. All Islamic land, yes, it's mostly Jews, so you call it a Jewish colony. Not that because they are ruling there, ruled by Islam, but overall population is Jew, right? And move from here, we need you to move on this side. Now, the Jewish leaders got to know that all the Muslims that are residing here for a couple of good years, they're going to be moving on. So they came pleading, came begging, they came, please, don't leave this place here. You need money, we'll give it to you. You need land, we'll give it to you. You need business, we'll give it to you. And according to one report, if you need women, we'll give you women to get married. But don't leave the place. Because you all set foot here, before you're setting foot here, there was fights here. There was anarchy, there was chaos, there was corruption, killing, murdering, raping, robbing, cheating. And you all came here, and there's absolute peace. Your prisons, your teachings were so refined, such a standard, that there was total peace. So now you all are going to go, or you're going to move away, then we'll go into a relapse. Again, there'll be raping, killing, murdering, robbing, cheating. All these things will carry on again. Your prison was such a good thing. Now, you compare this statement against now our type of people, and they say, oh, we're leaving South Africa. We're going to live in Swaziland. Say, just for example, all of us. So, what would the locals and the rulers say? MashaAllah, we'll help you. We want a ticket. Take you. That means that we lost the spirit of Islam, the true teaching of Islam. So the Tabligh Jamaat's whole effort, the whole idea is to get the spirit back. Right? Get the ethos back. They're trying in their own way. They're getting somewhere, mashallah, but they're getting somewhere. But what is the whole idea? The idea is to get back to the true ethos. Right? That's the whole idea. So you got that true ethos, when you got that ethos, then people are seeing, alright, you can see pani ka pani or doodh ka doodh. They can identify, they can distinguish, this is right, this is wrong. They can see this is suraj, this is clear crystal water. They can make it out. But now, are we presenting the pure, undiluted, unpolluted brand of Islam? Or are we giving a brand of Islam that is diluted or is polluted, contaminated? What are we doing? Testing what we are doing, right? Just now there was a forensic report, right? I won't mention the details, but so a white person was in charge to do the forensic report, right? So it was of some of our people, right? But now that white person said, it is so disgusting. Now this is now the impression that he's got of us. So is there anything now to attract him to Islam? Is there anything there to attract him? He sees your behavior. He is flirting with a woman there, right? And you doing the same. He's drinking, you drinking, whether Dubai, wherever. But you're doing the same thing. He's clubbing, you clubbing. So does he see any difference? So he must see Islam uncontaminated, pure. He mustn't just see a costume of Islam. Now he's seeing an Arab garb, he sees that that's Islam. But then the same person is behaving, there's no difference between my behavior and his behavior. In every other respect, the behavior is the same. So is he finding a difference? So the effort is to get that same behavior right. That right Islamic ethos, straight, clear, pure, uncontaminated. So the time is up. But I got a concern. Concern is from before Ramadan, right? And so I'm sharing the concern with the intention that someone can take it on, right? And the concern, how it started, what was that boy from Maritzburg, Al-Zazar? Uwais, yeah. So his father was in Maritzburg, so he spoke to me, right? So one is that we call him Uwais Amod. But I ask you, what is the Quran Sharif saying? Ba'dismu Amod. So why should we distort the Quranic name? We should change the name. The Quran is the guide, right? And the Quran is the guide. If someone misspelled it, so if you go with the misspelling or the Quranic spelling. Ba'dismu Ahmad. Even my great-grandfather, I saw in the records, they called it as Amod. But the whole family, they don't say Amod, they say Ahmad. But when you see the papers, you know, in the home affairs, you see the papers, it's spelled as Amod. I suppose the white, that's how he thought, he felt must be written, right? So we took it from him. So does he become our instructor for the Quran Sharif? So the Quran says the instructor to go by that name. So the concern here was very valid, and that thing is still striking me. So his concern was, let's hope someone can buy this one, take the speaker on. He says that he's from Maritzburg, and there's a hospital, Grace Hospital, right? I suppose it's done quite well, like our Lutuli or something close to that. So you're getting referrals right from Newcastle, Ladysmith, Dundee, Escort, all coming into Grace Hospital. That's what I understood. Someone from Maritzburg, maybe they can confirm this, right? What I say is, everybody is not in a position, not wealthy enough, to come and regularly visit his relative that's hospital, right? Hospitalized, or sometimes hospitalized, serious cancer, whatever. 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, he's there. There's nobody to see him. So when there's nobody to see him, then a Christian group is coming in and doing some rites. And sometimes the person is dying, a Christian is coming and doing the funeral rites. Now this person now is clutching to every straw just to get life. So he doesn't have the knowledge that this is Christianity, this is kufr. He is concern, basic concern is, I must clutch to life. this thing, this person is giving you something, let me just take it. Now imagine if that was his last moment then. He's doing the right, and that is last moment. And how is he leaving the world? Is he leaving the world with kalema, or is he leaving the world in some other way? How is he leaving the world? So everybody is not in the position to come and visit his relative often, right? They'll come once in 3 months. They don't have the money. Basic, hand to mouth, they're living. Right? Now we think, you know, everybody's rich, they must see to their own relative. So he can't manage it, and we're not concerned. But isn't Islam a common concern? Our concern, their concern, isn't it a concern? Right? That's why I think at times, sometimes, some things become overtraded. Becomes overtraded. The trade has to go supply and demand. What? Demand and supply. What is the demand? And we supply accordingly, right? There's a demand for something, the supply comes accordingly. Now, we heard about all the Qiraat class now. Everybody go do Qiraat. Now, are we looking at in this perspective, demand, and let us supply according to the demand? We thought of a Hifz class, so much of sawab. Whereas there are other areas that are being neglected. Can you see the areas that are being neglected? So there should be, I can't do it myself, but it doesn't mean I mustn't share the concern with others. Maybe someone, Allah Akbar, strikes it in his mind. So there must be a group, organized group, amongst our people. Alhamdulillah, our people put their heads together, they can do things, right? Seeing this water crisis, right? And by the grace of Allah, we can't be boastful. Nearly every area you'll find, it is a Muslim that is doing something. Here, Muslim, Fulwani, Muslim, right? And our people doing it. So Allah gave us that understanding and that tawfiq to do it. Just that we put our minds together and we start it off. But it has to be done organized, right? How to do it, right? So you get this big public hospitals, etc. And people are, you know, on the way out. So on the way out, what do we do for them? What do we do? How often do we make the visits? What should we be doing? Some guidance, some visit, some type of a strategy, how to save these people. There was one chacha living here in Spinker Beach. Unfortunately, I won't mention his name. Unfortunately, he got married to a Christian. He converted her, but it wouldn't seem like she converted correctly. Some days later, he moved on to Malagasy or wherever. Malagasy Oriental, they were giving homes to the underprivileged, and he got a place. So now, he is lucky that the Spinker Beach Jamaat, that Outgush, was working in that area. Now, he was terminally ill, and was on his way out. That time when he was here, I remember going for Gush at his place. Now he's there, and now luckily they got something like an out Gush, so they went to visit him. Now he's terminally ill, and he's bedridden, can't move. Now his family and all that, they saw now, we controlling the whole thing, and they went back to Christianity. Now in this state, what he's to do? He's bedridden, terminally ill. Now what must he do? But perhaps there was a spark inside, it was appreciated by Allah Ta'ala. The Jamaat just went in. The Jamaat just went in, he cried. He said, just a few moments ago, there was a pastor and a whole Christian delegation that came to do my funeral rites according to Christianity. And I was feeling horrible. But I'm asking myself, what should I do? I can't speak to my folks because I'm bedridden, terminally ill. You can see I am about to go. And what must I do? Now you came up, and now read the kalima, and I will repeat with you. You took that tasbih, reading, and he passed out. See that. But there will be cases like that as well. Now, are we doing something for this type of groups? So this will apply to all of us. Let's say, we don't put all our investments in one box. See, where is the investment? Where is the demand? And how do we strategize? How do we plan ourselves? What do we do for them? person is at his terminal. So there must be some organized group, be in Grace Hospital or any other public hospital. Obviously there's a procedure. You speak to the doctor in charge or the one that respect them, make some ikram of them, call them for an invite, etc. You talk to them with respect. They must, inshallah, they will agree with it. Because if they're allowing Christians and others, then why shouldn't they allow you? But now, do the approach and do it rightly. How much of work can be done? See, this is one concern I have. And the other concern that we, most of us don't understand and don't realize that it's a concern. I think it's throughout the country, right? That you getting Muslims, old people from good families. You know, if you look at the surnames, two beautiful good surnames, right? But they became ill or handicapped or something, whatever, right? So they are placed in homes. And sometimes it's a Hindu home, benevolent home, right? So all the ethos is Hindu, or it's a Christian home, and all the ethos is Christianity. Now that old man or that old woman, there's no place for her to go, no place for him to go. And now can you imagine now what's happening to the old man or the woman in that period of his life? Now, the family don't want to take him, right? This is the only place that he's got for asylum, because it's a government thing, right? And we are concerned about the person. Is it also our duty also, at least we have some organized way, right? Whether it's a hospital, whether it's a person that is terminally ill at home, or whether it is a person that is in a home, right? You find out, see the numbers, what's going on, do something. For this person here, for this person here, we do something on it. Like say, otherwise, everything you're putting into one basket. Let's say, put all the egg into one basket. All doing talim, whatever you talim you want. Then who's going to do the other work? Talim is very important, right? It's important as tabligh, right? It's so important. But there are other areas also that are being neglected, and we're not concerned about it. That's my third concern. The fourth concern is about some 12, 13 years ago, there was a program in Mishlanga Masjid, right? They asked me to talk. Ulama program. I said, my concern is, see, the foreigners that are coming into this country, they're coming not in small numbers, big numbers they're coming. And the evidence for this is, you must go look at the Durban main masjid, West Street and Grey Street, right? That's like the face of Durban, right? You'll see at least about 70 or 90% foreigners, 10% local. Now, what are we doing for them? As though we are the guest, we are the host, they are the guest. They are the guests coming in, right? And we are the host. What are we doing for them? Now, in a few years, if you don't do anything seriously for them, and then they move on to some other khiyar, Qadiani, Shia, say, no, it's Muslim, right? What's going to happen to them? They're coming in, most of them coming in like bachelors, right? When they're coming in like bachelors, every man has got some need. In a few years, he'll get children, and the children that he'll breed will be what? What will be the future? So these are three, four concerns that I have. Just sharing it with the hope that someone can take it on. You know? Take it on, say that. We'll do it, inshallah. Even if it's three alims, say, well, let's try it, let's try out. And let's make a concerted effort, let's try. All of you are three. It doesn't have to be only ulama, one ulama, but we have to do something about it. Like I say, you don't put all your eggs in one single basket. And the game names that I know of, you know, it's so beautiful. It makes me afraid that one of our families don't end up like that. One of our own families don't end up like that. So we feel that person is worth his while as long as he is productive, right? He's not productive, then he's not worth anything. Then send him anywhere. That's how the mind has gone. The mind has gone. As long as the person is productive, then he is valuable. Not productive, unproductive, then push him to old age. See, that's the mentality. So this figure has to be created, how to do this thing here, how to take it on, whether it's the hospital, the visit, what do we do, the old age, or this foreigner that we're talking about. So, by the grace of Allah, if someone volunteer, not now, anyway, anyhow. But it just normally is a good starter. So it should start something. Allah is also.